Yo,
hello, we're back. We are episode 14, as in we are an angsty teen era of the podcast.
Yeah, you guys probably have acne all over your faces, or your breasts are developing.
This podcast does.
Yeah, we're going to talk about so much stuff this week. We're talking about a Taliban family. Anna, what does that mean?
It's the new nuclear family. It basically means to raise your family in Taliban captivity.
Someone did it. You can too. We're also going to talk about Palestine and Israel and all the conflict that's going on there, because now there's even more conflict, because what else is new?
We're going to talk about Quebec hating on Muslim women.
We're also going to talk about Vikings and why they have the words Allah in their costumes.
Yeah. That's kind of a weird one.
Yeah.
I have a new segment called Anna's Conspiracy Currency, where I come up with crazy conspiracies that are probably true because I'm always right.
Yep. She always is. We're also going to talk about five people that have excellent things going on and they deserve all of our praise. Please stay tuned to find out who they are. This is a good episode.
5 excellence minutes. How can you deny that?
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are ethnically ambiguous.
Hey!
Oh my god, we both said that!
It's in our blood. It's in Persian people, or excuse me, Middle Eastern people's blood to just
Thank
be like,
you.
Hey, at the end.
Yeah.
And yummy, 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 yum.
Hey!
Yummy, 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 yummy,
oh, whoa.
Yummy, yummy, yum.
Hey!
And that's our show, everyone. Thanks for listening. This is episode 14, I think, right? 14?
Dirty 14.
Is that what they say?
I have no idea.
Oh, nice to see you have you guys listen again. We have a face for radio, so that's why this is a podcast. I don't know if you guys listened to Hindsight, but I, Shireen, was a guest on Hindsight, if you guys want to hear all about my weird life.
With Daniel Van Kirk, and I was a guest on it a few months ago.
Yeah, that's the reason I was even on it, because he knows Anna, so... Connections!
You might know Daniel Van Kirk from being the whitest person on Earth and from Dumb People Town, which is also on the Feral Audio Network.
Thanks, Feral. We have stuff to talk about today. I don't even know where to start.
Let's start with this.
Yummy, 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 yum. Yummy, 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 yum.
Hey, yummy.
Me and Anna are going to have a CD coming out with our greatest
hits. It will just be a CD, and it'll be burned by me. So
remember burning CDs,
shoot me a DM, and I will, like, burn you a DVD of me and Shireen's songs.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. But do you remember burning CDs? I remember doing that when I was in high school and middle school. That was, like, the dopest shit.
Yeah, Shireen.
I used to do it for my uncle, who didn't know how to do it. He used to, like, tell me to put, like, 50 Cent Eminem songs on,
oh, really?
Like,
my dad would be like, can you put this Gougouche and all this other Persian music on a CD for me and burn it for me so I can listen in my car?
Well, I have like, one gangster uncle.
Ooh.
Let me rephrase that. He thinks he's a gangster.
Ooh. I have one of those siblings.
Yeah. So he wanted a bunch of, like, Eminem and 50 Cent and, like songs that say
ooh,
fuck.
Beforehand.
Oh, my God. Also, my dad, on the way here, I found out he listened to the most recent episode of this podcast, and he had an issue with how much I cursed.
How did he figure out how to do it?
I don't know, but I'm going to try not to curse a lot.
You know what? Fuck that.
I know. I can't help it. It's just my nature. He was like, I don't know what it is with your generation. I was like, I don't know either.
You should be like, I don't know what's up with your generation always having faults with everything.
No, don't say that.
I mean, it's true. Like, old people, like, always, like...
He's not even that old.
You
don't call him old.
He's an old person.
No!
You can walk into a room and they'll be like, what's that? And you'll be like, are you serious? We haven't even gotten, like, passed the threshold
yet. But he really liked it. He was really proud of us. So, thanks, Dad. Thanks, Baba.
Thanks, Baba.
What do you say? How do you say Baba in Farsi?
Baba.
Okay.
I'm going to be real with you. Not that crazy.
Okay.
And yummy, 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 yum. Yummy, 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 yum.
Hey, yum. Okay, I keep doing it more than I thought we were doing it.
Honestly, we should keep doing it. I don't know why. It's because I found a bunch of chocolate in one of the rooms here.
At yeah, the restocked.
Feral Audio headquarters, aka Chocolate Fountain World.
They restocked that pumpkin.
And now I'm like obsessed and I keep eating chocolates.
They've had a pumpkin filled with Halloween chocolate, or I guess just chocolate. And during Halloween time, it's all Halloween chocolate. But they have a pumpkin that's filled with candy, and they just, like, stock that one up. And Anna has taken full advantage of that.
Let me tell you about my day. So I drove across town to Hollywood this morning for work. Took me an hour.
Barf.
And then, 45 minutes, excuse me.
Oh, my God.
And then I drove back to Culver City across town. And this is all L.A. talk, sorry.
Sorry to our non-L.A. listeners.
Very inside L.A. right now. Mm-hmm. But then I drove back to the West Side, which is like another hour, 45 minutes, for a meeting.
Someone exaggerates, don't they?
For a meeting, and then I have to drive back here to record this episode, and then after this I have to drive back to the West Side again, and then late night I have to drive back to West Hollywood and then back to North Hollywood. That's right.
Busy girl.
I just have so much fucking work to do, you guys. I'm so behind on all my work.
And don't know, you drive a lot in LA when you have different things to do in different parts of town. It kind of kills you inside because, like, most of your life is spent in the car. So, say goodbye to your life, everybody. This is the real world. Let's get into some stuff.
I'm just joking. I was about to go back into yummy, yummy.
I knew you were going to do it, and I almost wanted to stop you.
No, I'm just joking. So the first thing I want to talk about is that family that was freed by the Taliban.
Yeah.
I have many thoughts.
Let's talk about
one, they had three kids, apparently four. We'll get into it. Three kids in captivity. Firstly, the reason they were captured, this family, is a Canadian-American. They're married. Give me a break. I don't know why I said that. They were backpacking through Afghanistan, apparently.
Okay. My mom has her own theories on this, which I will discuss in a second.
Yes, we'll get to those. We'll get to Ruhif's theories. Did I say that right?
Ruhif, yeah.
Ruhif's theories. That's why we should have a segment called Ruhif's theories.
Or just how to pronounce Ruhif.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So they say they were going to help with, like, villages that don't get any, like, basically any sort of, like, care from anyone. So they're going to, like, help these, like, poor villagers and stuff. I don't know. I also read another place they were just, like, doing a casual backpack.
Which, who does that? But also, yeah, if you guys didn't see the post, we posted about this on Instagram, so you can just see this guy's face.
He looks like an Amish guy on Rumspinger.
Oh, my God. You're so right.
I know I am.
Keep going. Sorry. I just wanted to let them know that the link is up there. And on our Twitter and on the Instagram, we give a little shout out.
Yes. So I'm going to deep dive into this fucking family because I became obsessed. Like, I do. I become obsessed about certain topics. And I spend
about you.
7 weeks literally immersing myself. Like, I started dressing like these people. So the dude was apparently at one point married to the sister of a guy, another terrorist whose name escapes me, who was held in Guantanamo Bay for, like, an attack he did when he was 15. That guy who just got all that money for, like, I wish I could tell you his name, but I don't remember. It was something Middle Eastern sounding. But that's the guy. We talked about him in the past, I believe. He was this terrorist. He got in trouble when he was, like, 15, when he says he was, like, brainwashed, whatever. He got put in Guantanamo Bay. He got out of Guantanamo Bay. And then he got, like, a fat settlement. Anyway, his sister was dating this Canadian guy he was married to this Canadian guy who got captured with his current wife by the Taliban. And so they were backpacking through Afghanistan, which, let me tell you, never fucking do that. That is some white-ass people shit. Don't be like, Afghanistan, you know what? Never explored it.
Yeah.
I'm going to strap on my backpack. I got it.
REI.
I'm going to tie my Nalgene up to the side.
Put some Clif Bars in my pocket. Yeah.
Going to grab some Clif Bars. Going to get some dehydrated ice cream for, you know, late night fun.
For the kids.
So they get captured by the Taliban because Taliban's like, okay, first of all, what are you even doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have three kids while in captivity, which is the most amazing thing to me. They say it's because they wanted to always have a big family. So they're like, why let this captivity hold us back?
They had the kids, like, conceive them and had them in captivity.
Yes.
Oh my God. I thought they were backpacking with their children.
No, no, no. You don't take your 1-year old on a backpacking trip in Afghanistan.
Oh my fucking God. These people are insane.
They had the kids in captivity of the Taliban.
Wait, so they were, like, in the same cell?
So this guy's like, they were, I'll get to it.
Fornicating so, and, like.
Well, they were like, look, why held a little Taliban captivity stop us from starting our family? Which is like, okay.
Insane. Because that's what you want to be, like, bringing a child into, a fucking, like, cell.
Right. Could you imagine? You're like, Dad, why do we live in prison? Dad's like, shh, 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 they can hear you. But, and then I'm very amused by the idea of, like, being like, you're trying to...
Yeah.
Like, I'm so scared, but, like, do you want to fuck? Like, I don't
understand.
Do you
think the guards, like, watch them fuck?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. They say, okay, there's some dark shit that came out from the guy, the man, whose name, honestly, I don't remember anyone's name, Joshua Boyle?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
That's him.
He said that his wife was raped by the Taliban and that they killed their youngest, apparently, like forced the wife to have an abortion, the youngest girl. Taliban spokesperson came out and said, that's not right. We only separated them maybe like once or twice because we didn't want stuff like this to come out.
Right.
We wanted to make it very apparent that they were not being separated and that the woman was not being raped because we didn't force the woman to have an abortion. She had a miscarriage, all this stuff. Which brings me to another point, which I'm obsessed with. The terrorist organization spokesperson.
Yeah.
What the, like, how
do you get that
I
job?
I'm obsessed with that job.
Yeah. You've talked about this before.
Yes.
And you brought up a really good point that I've been thinking about for forever. So ever since you brought that up, but like, first of all, who is that spokesperson? How do they get that position?
Yes.
And second of all, how does that spokesperson speak to someone that gets their statement
exactly.
out there?
Exactly. I don't understand, like, who's like, holding press conferences for terrorist organization spokespeople.
Like, oh, I want to get in touch with my contact deep in the fucking Taliban.
They're, like, reading the news like, that's not good press. We got to respond to that comment. Like, who's got the time?
Like,
they're here literally protecting their reputation.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you say we raped your wife. We are not that kind of terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here?
So I'm
obsessed. But also, here's the thing. They were, like, pretty chubby people when they went on this trip, and now they are thin as fuck. And that Taliban victim, like, prisoner diet, holy shit.
Yeah, it's going to be the hottest trend, you guys.
I'm just saying, if you're trying to lose some weight, go get your bitch ass literally caught up in some Taliban shit.
If LA can convince anyone to drink fucking cayenne pepper, they can get convinced to go into a prison cell and get starved for a week.
Like, instead of like CrossFit, it's just like you go get like, and become a victim
cell.
Of a Taliban.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know.
But the funniest part about this is that they were held captive for,
5 years.
5 years. And, Joshua Boyle, in this article that we shouted out last week, he didn't realize that Donald Trump was the actual president of the United States. He thought it was a joke that was made by one of his Taliban captors. Apparently, one of the captors told Boyle that the U.S. president was Donald Trump before he was forced to make a proof of life video to prove that he was alive. And then Joshua responded to this being like, it didn't enter my mind that he was being serious. This is what he was telling the reporters. And I think that's hilarious. And the photo of him in this article just shows his face realizing that it's not a joke in my mind. Like, it shows him completely dead inside. Probably because he's hungry and probably because Donald Trump is president. But yeah, can you imagine just being in jail or just like imprisoned in somewhere for 5 years? And then like, so much has happened in 5 years. Like, not only did Trump get elected, but the world is like on fire, so.
Yeah. Oh boy. So anyway, this family is on some shit. I don't know how these kids are gonna like.
Yeah.
Like,
It's like, oh, where were you born? Oh, I was born in Denver. It's like, oh, I was born in Afghanistan in a cell.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I also don't understand, like, the logistics of having a baby in, like, a Taliban prison. Like,
it makes me feel like the Taliban must have taken care of them at least decently. If the kids were fed, if the kids were, like, able to be breastfed or, like, have their family together or,
well,
like, whatever.
That's, okay, not to, like, be that person, but in a way I, like, kind of believe the Taliban only because it doesn't feel like the Taliban is out here to, like, rape women.
No,
they mostly would kidnap someone as, like, a political bargaining tool.
100%. I agree.
They're
with
not
you.
Here to, like creep on, like, random yeah. white women. And that's the key, white women. Like, that's not their
yeah.
thing. Like, Taliban does not care for America. Like, they don't
yeah.
want no American woman. Like, if they really wanted to do harm, they would have killed all the kids. Like,
yeah.
they would have,
like,
killed them.
Like, the fact that they were even still alive just shows
yeah.
that they had them for a certain reason, and that's for
like,
bargaining.
They allowed them to
yeah.
have children? Like, that's wild.
That's my point, is, like, they must have, I mean, if they were even allowing them to have sex, like,
yeah.
enough to have multiple children, like, that means that they cared about their
like,
welfare
I doubt
enough.
He was, like, jerking off in his hand and then being like, all right, artificially inseminate
yeah.
yourself. Like,
yeah.
They were getting it on in, like, some crank-ass
yeah.
prison, and Taliban was being like,
chill.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's just, like, a mindfuck of a story right there. I would seriously recommend looking into it and just, like...
It's a trip.
It's a trip. It is a fucking trip. Yeah, this guy, fucking Joshua Boyle, what is with you? Don't go backpacking in Afghanistan,
yeah, guys,
everybody.
Even if you want to go, like, help a village, like, it's
there
the
are
Middle
other
East.
Ways. There are other ways to help. Other ways.
Like, the Middle East is not a terrifying place, but if you go somewhere that actively has, like, that kind of situation going on, like, Afghanistan is a war zone. Like, it's a place where things aren't fully settled. Like,
yeah.
it isn't like, oh, Iran, where it's just kind of like a country that's doing its own thing. I mean, it's, like, seen in a certain way, but, like, it's a city, and you can go to Iran with a visa, don't get crazy, and, like, walk around and not be captured by a terrorist organization. Afghanistan, it's a little bit more remote out there, okay?
Yeah.
You need to be a little bit more careful because there is actual terrorist organizations roaming around looking for, like, people like that. People who are, like, they seem naive, they're out there, they're trying to help, but they're also, like, not prepared to
deal with the consequences of being in a country that...
Also, if you are going to go to a place like that, you need to find people who can help you. You need to go with someone who knows the lay of the land, who knows where not to go and where to go. You
who
need
at
literally,
the very least
like,
knows
a
the
guide
language.
Who can even, maybe even carries a gun. Like, you need someone. Like, you really have to prepare yourself with these kind of things. You can't
yeah.
just, like, walk into fucking Afghanistan and be like, da 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 da.
Like, you're not immune
da, 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 da.
To, you're not, you don't have, like, a fucking immunity shield just,
yeah.
like, to danger. Like, I feel like that's the most entitled bullshit ever. Like, that's the why I had a problem with, like, Into the Wild. Because this is, like, it's a different topic, but it's kind of related. Just, like, the idea that you can just, like, go out into nature or into a foreign country and everything will be okay because you have good intentions and like, I don't know, like, I know what I'm doing. It's like, no, but you need to be prepared. Like, the whole, like, just be smart. Just
yeah.
be prepared and prepare yourself. And I could talk about my problems with stuff like that forever, but I won't because, yeah.
Also, another point on the terrorist organization spokesperson, they have better, like publicists, basically, because that's what that is. A spokesperson is basically
100%,
like,
yeah.
a publicist of some kind. They have a better publicist than, like, the, like, alt-right, like, white
oh
nationalists.
My God.
Like, at least they have people, like, defending them. Like,
yeah.
they have nothing out here. Like, people are just, like,
They're
out
evil.
Here.
They're evil, but they have morals.
yeah, like, they're like, how dare you make that accusation? We
yeah.
will respond in a calm manner.
I love that.
We will put a statement out
yeah.
responding to your accusations of us, a terrorist organization,
it's
doing
one
something
thing to
bad
be
to you.
It's extremist, but it's something to be rapist, you guys.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, I have more
Don't
issue...
Don't confuse them.
I have more issue with Harvey Weinstein than I do with the Taliban right
yeah,
now.
Currently,
yeah.
Curly, yeah.
Yeah.
At least the Taliban's out there. You know. You
yeah.
know what's up.
Yeah.
Harvey Weinstein out here pretending like he ain't no bad man.
But
being
apparently
like,
everyone
I need
knew.
Help. Give me a second chance.
It's
like,
it's
you
like,
mother
you fucking
fucker.
Ogre trash can. Like,
if you touch Lupita, if you ever come at Lupita again, you will hear from
or
us.
Or anyone else.
Mostly Lupita, because that fucking op-ed in New York Times
was
ravaging.
That was insane.
I was, like, trying to punch him from the article. Like, I was getting so wild up, like, how dare he touch my Lupita? Lupita's a queen.
She is a queen. I also want to mention...
And I think that's a perfect example of someone who did not need Harvey Weinstein to build a career.
Exactly. She was talented and she had... Like, she did it on her own.
Like, no one is going to ruin your career. You never have to feel pressured to be with any rando industry dude. Not even, like, rando, but just, like, powerful dude. Because if you do the work and you are, like, a hard-working, talented person...
That's true, but I also think that fucked up people in high positions also can fuck you over really fast.
They can, but just keep yourself around good people and then don't go
to
Four Seasons.
You just have to find the right ones. You just have to find...
For private parties.
Yeah.
Harvey.
If you guys didn't see this, Courtney Love in 2005, in an interview on like some red carpet event, someone asked her like what would be the one piece of advice you'd give to an actress or someone in the industry. And she said, she looked at her publicist and she was like, should I say this? She's like, what will I get, like, in trouble for this? And then she, like, says, like, oh, fuck it. And then she turns to the reporter and says, if Harvey Weinstein asks you to go to the Four Seasons after party, say
her
no.
For private parties,
yeah.
Say no.
Like,
and she actually got iced out by CAA for saying that.
Yeah.
So, low-key, CAA is the devil.
CAA and everyone
but
fucking
But if
else.
You want to represent us, girl, we out here. Don't even worry about it. No, I'll have this edited on the podcast. Don't worry about it. I'm such industry trash.
But I mean, from what it sounds like, the majority of the industry knew, and that's just disgusting to me. Not surprising, but disgusting. I don't want to talk about Harvey Weinstein forever. I feel like we talked about him so much last time. He doesn't deserve our breath. Doesn't deserve it.
Breath.
Breath of the Wild is a game I want to play. I want to talk about Palestine a little bit. So Al Jazeera had this great article last week about Palestine. The Palestinians have vowed to Israel we're not leaving Jerusalem. So,
which is fine.
Israel has been doing some fucked up stuff recently and closing and canceling a lot of events that are put on by Palestinians, saying that they're extremists and whatever, with no evidence. For example, they've been like, the Israeli police like stormed this, this mosque that was, home of the Yabus, cultural center. And the Israeli police stormed the place and they were looking for the head of the person. They were looking for this guy named Jabari, who was a researcher for the Arab Studies Society NGO. And, they basically just, they raised questions about, what Palestinians are doing in Israel, or Jerusalem in particular, and it's kind of ridiculous because they're trying to, like, basically bully them out of this really holy city for them. And I understand it's holy for Jewish people, too, but you can't claim one
also,
city as your own.
They just want to, like, silence these, like, researchers who are, like, presenting these papers about, like, information, like, they don't want information disseminated to the public, basically. They're trying to, like, silence people who would ever say anything negative against Israel.
Yeah. These NGOs, they're tasked with providing services for Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem. And then since it's called the Oslo Accords, which is like basically this law that was passed, Palestinian Authority is not allowed to operate in Jerusalem, which is really fucked up because if you're allowing, Jewish people and Israeli authority to operate in Jerusalem, you should allow Palestinian as well, because the Palestinians were there first. Like, you occupied it first. You can't pretend that the Palestinians are not occupying your city when you did the same thing to them. And before the creation of Israel, like, in this past century, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim people were all living, like, together and peacefully, and then the minute the addition of this state was formed, a lot of conflict arose, and I think looking into the history of that is really important when you're trying to talk about Israel versus Palestine and the fact that it's even a versus. They're making it a versus by
basically they just accuse anything they don't like, they accuse it of being organized by a terrorist organization.
Exactly.
And so the UN Human Rights Committee, they've repeatedly criticized Israeli counterterrorism legislation for the vagueness of definition, ambiguity of language, and evidentiary presumptions, which is, according to Al Jazeera. So they basically just they have these like vague laws and then they just use them to like discriminate against Palestinians really hard.
So in 2014, the El-Quds Center for Legal Advice had planned an open discussion on civil service in the center, but Israeli authorities shut it down over allegations that it was organized by the Popular Front of Liberation of Palestine, a Palestinian political party that Israel considers a terrorist group, but it's definitely 100% not a terrorist group. It's just, that's what the facts are showing.
It's a center for people to get together and deal with the fact that Israel is trying to destroy them as a people.
Exactly. And then this, the Yabus Annual Literature Festival was also shut down in 2009, and a few years later, a session on the Arab Spring was canceled. So literally, like, a literature festival was shut down in 2009. Like, what literature, y'all? Like, it's not a fucking terrorist group. And then a session on the Arab Spring, which is extremely important to talk about, not terrorist-related at all, was also canceled. So these closures are done to make people feel hopeless.
Yeah, and they also have, like, local banks, like, make them shut down their, like, bank accounts.
Yeah. Like, that's fucking, like, these, that's like, insane.
Organizations. It's, just because they're Palestinian.
Yeah, and,
they just pressure them any way they can to, like, just silence them. And it's so weird to me. It's like, these people
it's like
are
the
not
mob.
Bothering you.
Yeah, it's literally like a mob mentality, and it's disgusting. But they're closing down things, and they're shutting people out to make them feel hopeless to the situation around them, and eventually they want them to give up. That's their goal, to make the Palestinians give up and let them have no control in their city.
Yeah, now fucking Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who's the worst, he's vowed to adopt another bill to limit foreign funding of NGOs in Israel.
Like,
so basically he's trying to cut down any ability for these NGOs, for like Palestinian people, to get any money from the outside.
Yeah.
So they can't even like basically exist.
And a lot of the societies, including the Arab Studies Society, has received a lot of its funding from abroad, including the UN.
Yeah, the development program there.
Like, what? Like, come on. And despite these obstacles, I mean, they're just going to continue to like fight on. And, there's a event that's coming up that's, Jabari is going to present his research paper on Al-Aqsa. So he's saying, on the contrary, this will encourage us to work more. It will give us more strength and energy. This is a quote from Elias, who was, I didn't really catch what he did, but you can read the article. Basically, they're saying, we're not leaving Jerusalem. We're staying no matter what they do. I love you, Palestine. We're behind you 100%. And this is just fucked up, and it's not getting any attention in the American media. Of course, Al Jazeera is the only one that's covering it.
And again, Israel shut down their Al Jazeera offices.
Yeah.
Like, how is that not the most, like, they shut down a press that tells the truth?
Probably the only press that tells the truth over there. Like, the fact that American media won't even show Israel in a negative light is so telling of how skewed everything is. Like, you have to open your eyes to the fucking truth and look at media websites and
the truth, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So I just needed to talk about that. And despite all the criticism, this controversial bill about not funding NGOs was passed. So Israel needs to get over itself and fucking just... God.
Yeah. And on more, stupid fronts. Quebec passed a new law that says that it's illegal for Muslim women or other individuals to cover their faces when they receive public services, which basically just means like when you go to the post office or when you go to the bank or when you ride the bus, like you can't cover yourself, which is
fucked up.
Yeah, it's some trash. They have to,
like,
the law forces citizens to uncover their faces in order to receive or give public services in the French speaking province, according to Al Jazeera.
That is the most fucked up shit. Like, you wouldn't force a nun to take off her fucking garb when she is at the DMV. Like, you can't, how do you rationalize forcing a Muslim woman to take off her headscarf, which is extremely important to her religion?
Yeah.
That's
and it's basically, they're just targeting Muslims. That's a blatant act of targeting Muslims.
Yeah. Muslim women in Quebec are feeling targeted by the law, rightfully so, which is the latest in a series of attempts by the provincial government to raise the issue of Muslim women's attire. I love fucking white women or just like non-Muslim women giving a shit about Muslim women's attire. Like, you're not wearing that shit.
It doesn't affect you.
You're not wearing the burqa or the headscarf or anything. Shut the fuck up.
It has nothing to do with you.
Muslim women don't care what you fucking wear.
Yeah.
Like, why do you care what they wear? It doesn't ruin your life or affect you in any way. Oh, my God. basically, this article on Al Jazeera, of course, the message they're sending to those women is that you stay at home and you don't come out of your house because they're choosing to cover their faces. They cannot board a bus or any public transportation to receive any services. So they're forcing those Muslim women to feel like they're not a part of their own community. And it's just disgusting. It's disgusting.
And Ihsan Gardi, who's the executive director of the National Council of Canadian Muslims, said in a statement that the legislation is an unjustful infringement of religious freedoms that runs contrary to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So, like, they're basically, like, they're targeting a group of people.
Yeah, they're not
based
saying...
off religious reasons.
Yeah.
And it's not okay. Like, it's... there's fundamental rights that are being fucked with, and that's
yeah.
Also, like, how are they even going to implement this? Like, bus drivers are going to be like, "Ma'am, please remove your headscarf."
Yeah.
Could your boot remove your headscarf a bit? I'm sorry. I'm just being a dick. Aren't Canadians supposed to be chill? It's because French Canadians. The second you put France in it,
And many Muslims in the province are afraid to speak out against legislation because apparently the debate is extremely violent, and a lot of people feel very passionately about Muslim women not covering themselves, which is kind of ridiculous because I think a lot of Western people, white Westerners, they associate a covered woman with oppression or someone that's being controlled. They don't even consider the fact that maybe she did it on her own accord, and perhaps she just doesn't feel comfortable showing her hair or her skin. And whatever her reasons are, it's none of your fucking business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... like, literally, just think of a fucking nun. If a nun walked into your bus, would you want her to uncover herself first? Like, no, that's her own conviction. That's her own religion. That's how she chooses to have a relationship with her God. It's no different just because the woman is brown. And it shouldn't be. So fuck Quebec and fuck French Canadians for letting this happen. And I hope it gets overturned somehow soon.
I don't know if it will, but they're definitely fighting it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, enough about news about oppressed peoples.
I mean, us.
By other countries.
Yeah.
So, some quick news. I'm not going to get too far into it, but you can look it up in a link we post. Trump has put the Iran nuclear deal in limbo, and he's basically... right now, it's up in the air, and it has to go through Congress. So, basically, we'll see what happens, and so we'll keep you updated.
Yeah, he just loves the word deal, I think, and we'll do as much things to keep talking about his deals. It's just, anything that Trump says just makes me want to barf and die at the same time. I don't know if you guys saw this, or heard this, rather, but he was talking about Puerto Rico, and he said it so, like, he, like, over enunciated the word Puerto Rico so much in this speech that I literally got
dry heaved. Like Puerto Rico or something like that, which I think is very telling why he didn't even mention Niger. Like, they're like, you cannot say Niger.
Yeah.
You are not allowed to try and say Niger.
In a statement he did, like, literally minutes before that speech, he said Puerto Rico, like an American.
Yeah.
Not an American, like a white person American. And then the minute he says on the stage, he just says it for like a full like 2 seconds, Puerto Rico. And I literally
Like making a joke out of it, which is like, dude, just, like, people are dying, you fuck. And he gave himself like a 10 out of 10 on like dealing with the crisis, which is like, you didn't even do shit.
Also,
so
don't rate yourself, you dumb fuck. Like, what? Oh my God. I want to talk about this thing that Anna brought to my attention about the Vikings. Let's talk about...
Right. So, this is very random, but researchers in Sweden, they found all these, like, Viking... they found all these, like, costumes from Viking boat graves, and they, like, inside the costumes, like, inside the flap of the coat, I don't know what they're called, they found, like, Allah stitched into it.
What?
Which is very strange. They have found Allah and Ali stitched into, with silk and silver thread, and those... stitched into the patterns, like inside. So, archaeologist Annika Larsson of Uppsala University, which is in Sweden, became very interested in it, and in the excavation found all this stuff, and she like couldn't make sense of it, any of it. And so they're like trying to unlock this weird puzzle, and they're talking about how like, how basically like, how like so far back they were still like, there was still this weird like connection.
That's insane.
I don't understand it.
I mean, so Allah and Ali makes me think that they were Shia Muslim, like something about the Shia sect of Islam, because Ali was, he's a nephew of Muhammad, or like a kind of like a descendant of his, and the Shia Muslims are very protective, and they basically are very respectful of Ali. And compared to the Sunni Muslims, the Sunnis don't really have that. They don't hoist him up on that pedestal as much as the Shias do, and that's the big difference between the Sunnis and the Shias, is because the Shias believe that Ali was the rightful heir to Muhammad's like legacy, and the Sunnis disagree. So that's the big thing. So the fact that there's both Allah and Ali woven in the silk makes me kind of think there's like something about the Shia sect in there.
I don't know, but it's the first time historic items mentioning Ali have been unearthed in Scandinavia.
Yeah, Scandinavia.
And
what?
They found this ring that said "For Allah" on the inside. So,
what?
Like, there's some shit going on. And basically, it just shows that like there's some deep interconnections that we're not even aware of, from like years on years on years on years ago, from like the Middle Ages. Somehow, someone probably went to the Middle East and brought it back or something. Like, somehow this is connected, but we will really never know until these archaeologists keep researching and tell us what happened. But like
that's like so wild to me, because when you learn about Muslim history and the history of Islam, especially like in art and architecture and just culture in general, you never learn about the its prevalence in Europe. You learn about it in Spain. You definitely learn about its presence in Spain, because it was there's a huge Muslim population in Spain, but Scandinavia just feels like the most white place in my mind. And so the fact that they were over there too is just so indicative of how vast that religion was.
Yeah, and they say the woman Annika Larsson said that like she became interested because the material had come from like Asia and Persia and China and those areas. So it's I don't know, it's very interesting how it all connects. Of course, we won't know for a while, because they need to research this and see what else they can find.
Yeah, but it's wild.
It is pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this to my attention, because I completely missed this news article, and it's so fascinating. Because I studied art history a little bit in college, and this kind of stuff is so cool to me, because so much history is unearthed with the art and the costume and just the architecture of a culture.
And we're talking about costumes because we're a few weeks away from Halloween.
Yeah, so if you want to be a Viking, make sure you inscribe Allah on the inside. Also, do you know what you're going to be for Halloween?
No, I hate Halloween.
Yeah, I don't know if I... Last year I was really lazy and I bought a Cookie Monster onesie.
I'm only here for the fucking chocolate.
I bought a Cookie Monster onesie last year, and the year before I was a robot. And I'm even lazier this year, so I might just go as myself, which is scary enough.
All right, well, here's some update in ISIS news. Guess what? ISIS was defeated in its Syrian capital of Raqqa. That's right, Raqqa Raqqa Flocka Flame.
ISIS, we beat you. Yeah, I saw this. I was very happy about this. ISIS was defeated with the help, apparently, from the U.S. and the Syrian Democratic... what's the word? Sorry, I'm trying...
Why'd you delete that?
Because I'm putting in order on the thing so I can do it later. Now it's up there.
Oh, there's some weird shit going on this Google Doc, you guys.
No, it's not. I just put it in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S.-backed militias in Syria declared victory over ISIS in Raqqa on Tuesday of last week, and... it was raising flags over the latest jihadi footholds in a four-month-long battle. The fighting was over, and the alliance of the Kurdish and Arab militias was clearing, which is it's notable on its own, the alliance of the Kurdish and the Arabs, because there's a longstanding turf war there. But the fall of Raqqa, where ISIS staged, like...
They've been there since June.
Yeah,
it's wild.
They were doing parades there in 2014. It was a symbol. The fall of their place in Raqqa was a very big symbol of ISIS's like hopeful demise, because ISIS has lost a lot of territory in Syria and Iraq this year, and including its most prized settlement in Mosul. In Syria, ISIS has been forced back into a strip of the Euphrates Valley and the surrounding desert. So I'm really hoping their presence in Syria becomes less and less. I was so happy that they're out of Raqqa, because when I heard that they're even, I mean, it's a good thing. And so I'm hoping this is a sign of better things to come in Syria, because it's a long time coming and it's been years and years and years of just complete heartbreak and devastation there. So... fuck ISIS is what I'm trying to say.
But they're freed.
Yeah.
Try and come up with Raqqa things. Raqqa where? Raqqa flock of flame.
But apparently the militia fighters celebrated in the streets, and they were chanting slogans from their vehicles, and the fighters and the commanders were clasping their arms around each other and smiling amid all this rubble and the ruined buildings in the main square. So it's a happy moment, but also a sad moment, because you have to realize that everyone has to rebuild, and a lot of these people have left their homes because they're destroyed. I'm happy and hopeful, which is happy. I'm happy.
Sorry, when I said they'd been there in June, I meant they've been fighting since June.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Since June. It's been 4 months.
It's been a long fight to get ISIS out of Raqqa.
Yeah. The Syrian Democratic Force is what I was trying to say earlier. Because the Syrian Democratic Forces has been supported by a U.S.-led international coalition with airstrikes and special forces on the ground since the battle for Raqqa started in early June. So, the final SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, assault began on Sunday after a group of Syrian jihadists evacuated the city under a deal with tribal leaders, leaving only a hardcore of up to 300 fighters to defend the last positions. So, and Raqqa was one of the first big ISIS captured territories in early 2014. So the fact that they have outed them in this long held place is really notable, and I'm really happy. And I congratulate everyone that was over there. Not that they listen to this, but
I want to congratulate everyone who fought against ISIS.
No, seriously, I'm just so happy for them and proud.
So, we have 5 excellence minutes tonight. That's right. Tonight. Yeah. What am I talking about? But
tonight.
Before that, I want to get into a new segment, okay?
Oh, no. I didn't know
it's
about
It's called
this.
Anna's Conspiracy Hour. And it'll only take a few minutes. I don't want to call it an hour, but
Anna's Conspiracy Corner.
No, there's no corners in here.
But conspiracy and corner have the same sound at the beginning. Conspiracy.
Okay, then let's call it
couch.
Anna's Conspiracy Currency.
No, it's a tongue twister. Couch or Anna's...
There's no couches in here either.
Anna's Conspiracy...
All right, we'll workshop
okay,
this
sorry.
Later.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, so here is my conspiracy. So I don't know if you guys heard about the Panama Papers, but it was basically some papers, some files, I don't know, they're probably actual papers, that came out about all these people who have, like, offshore accounts in Panama. So basically it's, like, where you can hide money. You know, if you're to Switzerland, Panama
some shady
papers.
Ass rich
so
people.
A bunch of papers came out that named a bunch of people, and it was like really fucked up. And this journalist from Malta, Daphne Caruana Galizia, she's the one that like basically unearthed all this stuff, and she was part of like bringing it to, I don't know, public eye, whatever. But anyway, she was killed in a car bomb blast last week or so. So what do you know? It's like a John Grisham novel has came to life.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking directly about Pelican Brief. But this is basically like the Panama Brief. And so while she was driving in her car exploded and everything flew everywhere and her body was like blasted. And I think, here's my conspiracy theory, is that the prime minister's behind it, because him and his wife and one of his, like, directors, people, minister, I don't know what they're called, he was named in the papers. Him and his wife and his people were named in the papers. What's his name? Oh, Maltese Prime Minister Joseph Muscat. He has denounced the killing and is calling it a barbaric attack on press freedom. And he says, I will not rest until I see justice done in this case. Now, if a statement has... Here's the thing. You probably did it, motherfucking Prime Minister Muscat. You're probably somehow involved in it. Because if you say too much, you're clearly guilty. That is, like, number one rule. No one says, I will not rest, dot, 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 unless you had something to do with it. If you're literally like, I will not rest until I find out who ate all these cookies, you probably sanctioned that cookie eating. Like, you are somehow involved. Like, you are being shady as fuck, and you're saying way too much shit, man. Anyway, so that's my conspiracy. I think he's somehow involved because it, like, was going to probably ruin his career eventually. So, you shady fuck Muscat, tell us who did it. Tell us who you hired. Tell us who you're working with. And if I'm wrong, well, you're shady anyway, so fuck off. But,
yeah, that's crazy.
She's basically been, like, shaping, shaking, and stirring up Europe.
And she has two sons and a husband, and it's just really heartbreaking. I mean, even if she didn't have those people, it's still heartbreaking.
And she filed a report, like, 2 weeks ago that she was receiving threats, so, like...
So put the fucking pieces together.
So, I don't know what the fuck is going to come up of it. I don't know what they're going to find out. All I'm saying is, hey, you're saying a little too much.
Yeah.
And, I don't trust anyone.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Like, you clearly were named in the papers. Like,
yeah. What? It's like, you only can benefit from her death.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So fucking shady.
It's so the shadiest.
I will not rest until this podcast is done.
Wait, this episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, me either.
Because I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm involved in it. See what I mean?
Yeah.
See what I did there? Okay, that's not really fully exactly what I meant, but you know what I mean. I'm just saying it's conspiracy.
Yep, that's it. And that's that section. I want to just really...
Should we get into our excellence minutes?
Yeah, I want to talk about this article. It's a couple weeks old, October 6th. But I really recommend looking at this this article on Al Jazeera and these photos that was taken by a Rohingya refugee, kind of documenting his experience in the crisis that's happening and his relocation to Bangladesh. And it's so powerful. And he basically documents his journey through Polaroids and photos that he's taken. And it's literally just seeing the crisis through the eyes of a refugee, and I can't recommend it enough. That's real life right there, and it's not fucking edited on for the New York Times or like some American photographer that came in and like documented it. It's truly the inside eyes that are telling you what's happening. It really made me feel feelings, and it's not always great to feel feelings, but but I really recommend you check it out. The link will be both on the Tumblr website and our Tumblr. Did I say Tumblr website? I meant to say the Feral Audio website and our Tumblr. And our Tumblr website. So please check out that photo series. It's just the crisis that's going on over there is so heartbreaking, and we can't just shut ourselves off from it. So,
it's an ethnic cleansing.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so let's get into our excellence minute. So for our first minute, I would like to shout out Fatemeh Akrami, a 24-year-old Iranian woman who is the first official professional skydiver out of Iran, who's a woman, and she is the first Iranian woman to experience free fall wearing a wingsuit.
So she's only 24.
Flew 4,000 feet over Russia. And,
insane.
Yeah, she's dope. You should look it up. Iran Wire wrote a really great article about her. I recommend checking it out. You can find it in our links. All right. Second excellence minute.
Okay. There's a man in fucking,
Oh, All right, you just ate up your
In London. Name. In London, there's a social worker in London in an organization called Eden Care. And this organization identifies terminally ill people who have no loved ones to look after them and sets about providing them with companionship towards the end of their lives. I'm going to talk about Abu Mumin's role at the center that he works at. He basically befriends terminally ill Muslims. And he makes them feel like they have a friend, and Muslims who ended up having Christian burials, basically. These people that he's saying that our work involves intensive befriending, and we spend the evenings with them and give them company. We take food, we do activities, we read the Quran, we even take them to trips to places they can't visit because of their physical disabilities. And most of the people Mumin and Eden Care helps, they are Muslims, but the group also befriends people that aren't. So they're just they're working with their partners to make sure that all the faiths ensure that they are taken care of, and just they have funeral arrangements that are according to their preferred rites, because funerals in Islam are very sacred and important, and that ritual is very vital to the religion. And the fact that they're making sure that these Muslims that have no one else to take care of them for, like people that have no family left, people that are too sick to care of themselves, it just really makes me happy that good people are still out there doing good things. And this organization, Eden Care, is one of those things. And I really recommend checking it out. And, I love this organization and this man because they are good, and they inspire other people to do good, which, Mumin is one of the 30 people at Eden Care, and the majority of them are volunteers, and their work has earned deep respect from the locals in London, but he concedes that the scale of their work is relatively small and much more is needed, and he says that it's a duty. I just think we're scratching the surface. So, shout out to you. You're excellent!
Yeah, I have two more excellence minutes. I want to shout out Fairuz Saad, who is the first Muslim woman running for Congress to replace a two-term Republican. She is from Dearborn, Michigan, which is a heavily Arab-American city. And yeah, so she's young, she's cool, she knows what's up, she's smart, she's progressive, and she's running for Congress, and she's like really doing it. So I recommend looking her up and supporting her and donating to her campaign. And shout out to Fairuz Saad. Hope I'm saying your name right. I'm probably not, because I'm
Fairuz.
A terrible person.
Fairuz is a really famous, that name, I hope she was named after this, probably not.
She, after university, she joined Barack Obama's Department of Homeland Security to work on community policing, which is a fancy term for strengthening relationships between immigrant communities and their local law enforcement. So she does good work, and she's been to the White House multiple times for Muslim administration members for events for them. And she's very hardworking, and we should support her because we need more Muslim women in the politics.
Yeah, 100%.
And you can read this independent article we have about her, about all her politics. She's a good person. And one more shout out for me. I want to shout out an 11-year-old girl from Colorado who has made a lead detecting device because she was troubled by the Flint water crisis.
Damn.
So she's 11 years old. She's this Indian girl named Gintanjali Rao. And she took notice about 2 years ago and was like, this is trash. We need to do something about this. She created a device. It's hard to explain because I don't really understand, but there's a disposable cartridge containing chemically treated carbon nanotube arrays, an Arduino-based signal processor with a Bluetooth attachment, and a smartphone app that can display the results. And here's how it works. The carbon nanotubes in the cartridge are sensitive to changes in the flow of electrons, and those tubes are lined with atoms that have an affinity to lead, which adds a measurable resistance to the electron flow. And if the cartridge is dipped in water that is clean, the electron flow doesn't change, and the smartphone apps shows that the water is safe to drink. But when the cartridge is dipped in contaminated water, the lead in the water reacts to atoms, causing resistance in the electron flow. that is measured by the Arduino processor, and the app then shows that the water is not safe to drink. So she is a genius.
Oh my
she
God.
She will probably go to MIT and
11 years old, man.
Become a world leader. And she was named America's top young scientist in the Discovery Education 3M Young Scientist Challenge.
Oh my God.
And she got a giant check for $25,000 for
well
doing
deserved.
That.
Well deserved. What the fuck?
A genius.
Good. I mean, that's a good act done with a good
Indian
brain.
Girl killing it.
Like, that's your intelligence used for the best reasons, I think. Like, just helping your community. That's amazing.
And that was all according to NPR.
Thank you, NPR.
And I don't know if you know about the Flint water crisis, but if you don't, it began in 2014 when the drinking water source for the city of Flint, Michigan was changed to the Flint River, and it's very fucked up.
Yeah, it's still
and
going
on. No one
on.
Is doing anything about it.
And it's like we all forgot about it, but it's still going on.
Yeah, and it all happened because it was like due to insufficient water treatment.
Yeah.
So they're now potentially exposed to the people of Flint, Michigan are potentially exposed to high levels of lead in their drinking water, which, guess what? Lead is very poisonous. Do not drink that shit. You don't want lead poisoning. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
So apparently, as of early 2017, the water quality has returned to acceptable levels. However, residents were instructed to continue to use bottled water or filtered water until, like, all the lead pipes have been replaced, which they don't think will be completed until 2020. So, it's an ongoing problem. And this little girl is here to fucking kill it.
Yeah, fucking, she deserves all the excellence. Like, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to shout out is my boy, our boy, Riz Ahmed! The Emmy winner is in negotiations with Netflix to star in Netflix's Hamlet as the leading role, of course. So he's working with this writer, Mike Leslie, who wrote Macbeth and Assassin's Creed, and apparently he's known him since college, but it's set in modern-day London, and the story follows, of course, Hamlet. And I think the greatest thing is that Ahmed, not only is he Pakistani, but he is British, and the fact that he is able to land and be able to shape this role that is predominantly always played by a white guy is so important, because he was the one that kind of said this whole, he said that, I'm paraphrasing here, but he has a quote where he talks about the three levels of being an actor of color. The first level is when you play a stereotype, like a Arab person playing a terrorist. The second level is when you play a brown person, but it's not in a negative light, like the sidekick or the funny black friend or something. The third level is when you surpass that and you play a role that is meant for even a white guy. Maybe your name is Dave or something. And I think he's like, I think that he's getting to that level where he's able to play these roles. And I'm so happy because he's so deserving of all of it. And I'm so excited. And I will watch the shit out of Hamlet and Netflix and anything that he does together with Netflix, because he is also just amazing for his activism. He just does amazing things. And he has this, he has an essay in The Good Immigrant that I very much recommend. He's so eloquent, and I'm so excited because this is exactly what should happen to actors that are of color. They shouldn't always be pigeonholed into things that maybe are unflattering. They should play things that anyone else can play, because we're all just fucking human. So,
yes, so that has been our 5 Excellence Minutes. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Until next week, Shireen will be Bite That Ass.
I'd bite that ass.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.